welcome back to the show, you guys. Today is a really fun one, and not just because I say that almost every time. The guest today is Taylor Averill, one of the most engaging and funniest and most insightful dudes I've ever had the pleasure of knowing. Taylor and I have known each other since we were high school volleyball rivals, and he went to Branham High School and I went to St. Francis High School, which were not really rivals, but at that time we were kind of two of the best schools in the Bay Area, and so we had some great battles. But anyways, I believe we cleaned up, so to speak, every time we played, so that's good. Sorry, Taylor. But looking back on our careers and past leading up to now, we really crescendoed in our familiarity with each other and friendship last season when we were in Padova, Italy. And I can honestly remember countless occasions where we sat in either of our rooms, mostly his because his rug was more comfortable, and had really, really long, deep conversations together with his fiance, now fiance, Hayden Gibson. Shout out, Hayden! We're going to get you on here soon. But anywho, getting back to today's guest, Taylor is always full of amazing paradigm-shifting ideas, one of which was our slowly developed business model and three-month experiment of starting a kombucha company while we were in Padova last year, which didn't end up working out, but maybe that might still happen. Who knows, someday. And it feels like our talks have been more sporadic as of recently, so I was happy to get him on the show and get him on the line and be able to pick his brain again for my podcast here. And we used to and still do talk about what we wanted to do outside of volleyball and how we wanted to make differences in the lives of other people, especially young people, through our platforms, however large or small they might be. I still tend to think that mine's pretty small, but and Taylor is also pretty humble about that as well. I don't think either of us think that we're huge celebrities because we play men's volleyball, and that's just how it is. But anyways, whatever influence we can have, we want to have, especially on young people and the lives of people who are in similar situations as us when we were their age. And with that being said, it all comes kind of full circle into the idea that this conversation needed to happen and be recorded this time, obviously. So with that said, let's get into it. Please, please welcome my next guest, the self-anointed Andre 3000 of healthy eating, my great pal, Taylor Averill.
When the concept of sitting and that kind of thing first kind of popped in my head, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, when I got connected through Austin, and I think he is the one who inspired me to, I think it started from him inspiring me to be more mobile with my hips and to sit without sitting in chairs, and this idea that, like, I think that kind of inspired me to start considering that, like, everything I'm doing every second of the day, my body's adapting to, right? Like, if I'm sitting in a chair, my body doesn't know for sure that I'm going to get up out of that chair in a little bit, right? It's like, okay, how can we sit in this chair with the least amount of energy and, like, da 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 da, and it's locking my hips up and, like, a lot of things that are not so good for your body.
Yeah.
And that is what inspired me to start thinking about, like, wow, like, everything I do every day, every movement I make is, like, creating a habit in my body. And so, trying not to absolutely overwhelm myself, I took things, like, at a pretty slow pace and was like, all right, so first thing we'll do, we got a rug. And I was like, when I can be conscious of it, like, let's choose to sit in a more, like, natural human way than to sit in a chair or something, if I have the choice. Right. It's so interesting now because I was actually just thinking about this a couple days ago, like, and this goes also for eating, but we'll just for the essence of movement right now.
I think that
there's a lot of cases now where I'm, like, getting really creative because I noticed too in Italy, it's like, well, we're having dinner for 4 hours every night. Like when we're having dinner as a team, it's like we're there for at least 3 hours, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like I'm going to opt out to sit on the floor when we're at a nice restaurant or something, as much as I would absolutely love to.
Man, and Austin would love that too.
Yeah.
Are you doing that?
As much as it'd really be making a statement to the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I got too much respect for the Italian culture. I'll sit in the chair.
Yeah.
But they're like, there are some instances, like for example, driving, that are maybe out of your control. And the part that I've been like interested in thinking deeper about is like the parts where in life you're forced to sit in a certain, like to sit in a chair or something, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you do then? And even like in a car, if I'm driving somewhere, like, is it just that, all right, I'm just stuck in this car for an hour to go to wherever I need to go? Or like, is there something productive I can be doing for my body while I'm in a position that's not optimal to be in?
Yeah, I think about that all the time, especially on flights. I was going to ask you like what you do on an airplane. Say we're flying to,
where do you want to go?
We're going to China.
China? I was thinking like Bahamas or Fiji, something warm.
Okay. Well, I was thinking more like upcoming, you know, volleyball Nations League trip, but yeah. Okay, now that you say it, Bahamas sounds a little bit better.
Yeah, let's stick with Bahamas.
Okay, so we're going to the Bahamas, but from here, so it's longer. So it's like an 8-hour trip.
Yeah.
How often are you getting up? How like?
Yeah. So actually, like when I flew from Denver just to get out here in October.
Yeah.
From Denver to New York, and then from New York to Milan.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably like 11, 12 hour flight. And I set an alarm on my phone every hour, and the alarm would just go off. And no matter what I was doing, I would stop and just like get up and move. I actually take those like little bands that you people use to like put around their legs or to do whatever. Yeah. I bring one with me. And I just keep it in my pocket. And when I go back, I do some like shoulder stuff, just kind of get the blood pumping. This is going to sound crazy, dude, but I actually, I'll do the Wim Hof breathing method in the bathroom just to not cause like a,
not cause a scene,
hold on, cause too much chaos.
Don't worry, everybody. I'm not hyperventilating. I'm not having a heart attack.
And, so I actually do that every couple hours. I'll do like a round of it. If I'm feeling really saucy, I'll try to do like two or three.
Take me through your breathing. Take me through that. What is the Wim Hof?
Wim
Hof breathing method.
So the Wim Hof breathing is a way to like over oxygenate your body. And so basically what you do is you take a full breath in and like a smaller exhale out, just like a relaxed exhale out. And by doing that, you fill your, I really am not a scientist and shouldn't be speaking about this.
Yeah. I've already made that disclaimer for all of my podcasts. So unless I'm talking to an actual scientist, you don't even need to let the listen.
As much as I like to think that I'm a scientist. I don't
think you will be one, I think for sure.
No, but so you take a big breath in and then like a softer exhale out, and you do that for about 30 times. And on that last breath, you breathe it all the way out, and then you hold that for, depending on the capability of you to hold that breath with no oxygen, with no air in your lungs, I can last around like the first round, like a minute and a half to 2 minutes. And when you feel that urge to start breathing again, you fight it for a little bit, but not too much. And you take a big breath in and you hold that for like 10 to 15 seconds. And, you get like this rush of euphoria and like, I don't know, the body just feels good, man. Straight up. I feel really good when I do it.
Yeah.
I know you and I had a big,
this is giving me flashbacks right now because
we were doing it a bunch last year, and I still do it as part of my morning routine too. So I, sometimes it's like for example, with the Wim Hof method, I have a tendency to get like overly inspired about something, right? Like if there's like a new health concept or a new whatever, I'm like, this is the only thing that exists in life. Like this is going to cure cancer. Like this is the best thing has ever been ever. And I'll get like super into it. So, that's what I did with the Wim Hof breathing. And to be honest, I found it to be really helpful for setting my focus before like athletic performance. So I still do the Wim Hof breathing before a practice, or definitely before a match. I added in with like visualization and some other stuff. And yeah, I love it. I love the way it makes me feel. And the science to kind of back up what it does for your body is there. And they're continuing to do more tests and stuff. So I think that is some new information that, it could be fun for people to play with.
Yeah. So if you don't know who that is, WIM space HOF, that's the guy's name. He's all over the internet with his method and his teachings, and he's got a course and all that stuff, that we both looked into, and Taylor's been a little bit more adamant about, but yeah. I think it's a super interesting concept too.
For sure. And I think, you know, Wim Hof method is just one specific type of breathing. There are plenty of others.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to bring the conversation towards more of a breathing topic, I think that this idea of like quality of movement, and with that being said, like breathing is such an interesting thing to play with. Like, for example, the past couple weeks for like my training, whatever I decide to do, I like to have like some sort of concept. And the concept I've been having for the past 2 weeks so far has been breathing while moving. And by that, I mean like just making that the point of focus before I do an exercise. So say it's something as basic as like a squat.
Yeah.
Be, you know, feeling my ribs, and I don't have to do it with my hands, but for people who want to understand what this breathing is like, to put your hands on the bottom of your ribs and take a breath into that, thinking about expanding in like a 360, like a balloon is someone's blowing a balloon inside of you. And,
not to sound dirty at all.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Someone's got the tip of their lips, the bottom of the balloon, and they're blowing it inside of you. And when you breathe out, you still want to maintain the shape of that balloon inside of you.
Right.
And you'll notice that if you try it right, if you guys want to try it right now and you do a couple breaths like that, that you'll feel your spine kind of neutralize. And for me, it's kind of like my setting point before I do any exercise. So for example, like I was saying, like to squat or something, I'll do one breath in and expand all the way. And once I know that it's like, I have all of the air, like 360 inside of me, then I'll do the movement knowing that like my spine is neutral. And like, then there's a bunch of other different things we could get into, but yeah. I think that is a good place to start. Like, you know, and this is why I think things like yoga and things are so interesting, kind of connecting the body and the breath again, because I think it's something that, a lot of people lose sight of, right? They're just so focused on like, oh, I need to do 3 sets of 10 of this and, you know, 4 sets of 6 of squat or whatever it is, that they lose sight that the quality of the movement is very arguably more important than the quantity or what you're doing specifically, you know?
Right. And you talked about the connection between the body and the breath in the yoga sense, and I also think that it's important to recognize the connection between the mind and the breath through that too, because when you're thinking of all of the natural natural processes that our body goes through, that's like one of the only ones that we can control with our mind on a second-to-second daily basis is breath. So yeah, I think that's a super important point, that we can start to control what our body does through our breath, and that has a ripple effect throughout.
For sure. And I think a lot of that has to do with this idea of like awareness.
Yeah.
And you know, that's why practices like meditation and even yoga and things can be so beneficial, to kind of reminding you how important it is just to be aware of something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and even for someone like myself, who, you know, I have a meditation practice and I have a breathing practice and things that I do every day, it's still so easy to get caught up in what you're doing that you forget how important those little bits of awareness are.
Yeah.
You know, like you're in a match and you know, it's a close game or whatever it is, right? And your body starts, maybe you start shortening your breath because you're not thinking about what's most beneficial for your body. Your body's just like in that fight or flight mode, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to have the awareness to be, to even take like a 7 second in and a 7 second out breath in between a play or something.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, I've tried that a few times, and that's a very difficult concept to.
It's super difficult. And like, I will say for myself, something I'm getting kind of getting into a habit of doing is, journaling is something I'm doing a lot. It's like my new thing right now is journaling, but, I just wrote some stuff on my shoes. I write stuff on my hands sometimes if like I need to be aware of something, and it's like getting a tattoo before actually I get a tattoo. And I found that like, it's not so, because people say, oh, you get a tattoo or something, and then eventually you just kind of, your body comes so accustomed to it that it becomes numb and you don't think about it.
Yeah.
And what I found is like, while that may be true, those extra, like, even if I, so I write on my shoes, I wrote drive and feel. And drive is for me to remind, just the personal struggle I'm going through with volleyball is like, mm-hmm. to remember to drive through the ball all the way, like all the way following through the ball when I'm attacking or when I'm serving the ball.
Interesting.
And feel is just to remind myself to like internalize when I'm like, maybe I'm overthinking something or whatever, just to like feel my body and stop thinking so much.
Right, right.
And then right next to it, I write Gucci Gang because I don't know, it's like an inside joke on the team. But anyways, and just having that reminder, it's like, okay, when I first wrote it, I wrote it the day before a match in Verona. I was really aware of it and I found it really helpful. And then like, I have it on my shoes. So every day of practice, right, I have it written down. And there are some days where like, I look at it maybe once or twice. But what I found is like, it doesn't matter if I look at it 10 times or if I just look at it once. It's the fact that like, it's that extra little bit of awareness that makes such a big difference, right? Maybe I'm like really in my own head, or maybe I'm really tired and I don't feel like working hard or doing anything or whatever it is. And like, I just happen to look down or something. And I see it, and maybe it inspires me, but maybe it doesn't. But without it, it definitely doesn't.
Yeah.
Right? Like without someone, especially when you're overseas, you don't necessarily have your teammates to always be like picking you up and doing whatever. Everyone's kind of
right, focused on themselves. Yeah.
So you have to be able to be vulnerable enough to write those things on your shoes and have in any way. If you can have a friend of yours or someone close to you on your team, or if you have that luxury of having someone hold you accountable, it's helpful.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times it's best to just take it upon yourself to like find your own solution. And if that means you have to write it on your arm, if you have to write it on your leg or your shoe or your pants or whatever it is, like do it, because you never know what that little difference can make. And every day matters, you know?
Absolutely. All right. So that's a good thought to, I think, kind of bridge us back to the past. I want to go back into like where this all got started for you. And if you'll indulge me. So where do you think you started to have that awareness of taking it upon yourself to make these subtle changes and be aware of this kind of stuff? Was it, you know, tell me about your transition to Hawaii. Tell me about what kind of changed there as you became like a professional level type player and then all American and yeah, tell me about the little transition or the big transition that went on there and then how that kind of springboarded you here.
Yeah. So out of high school, I went to, UC Irvine to play under John Sproth. That was the first shot at Division I volleyball. And
as a setter, right?
As a setter, yeah. I was a opposite setter growing up in the club. I started out as a middle, ironically, bringing it full circle. Started out as a middle, and that lasted about one season, my first season ever. They called me the credit card vertical. I couldn't jump. Like, I was not meant for volleyball, for sure. For sure.
Look at you now.
And, yeah, so then I... 16, 17, 18, transitioned to, I played outside in high school and then opposite setter, development setter. You know, I was just a tall guy, and that was kind of like the trendy thing at the time, was like, oh, let's make tall people setters now.
Yeah, I'm a product of that too, yeah.
And look at you now.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah, but yeah, so I was a setter opposite. Was fortunate enough to get the opportunity to play at UC Irvine. And yeah, that didn't last too long. So when I went to UC Irvine, about 2 months in, we had signed some papers saying that we wouldn't do any drugs like marijuana or mushrooms or any of these other things, and that we were going to be clean for this season. And we kind of did like a within the team, we all signed it and was like, let's hold each other accountable.
Right.
Well, I've always been kind of a free spirit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I had this opportunity to do mushrooms with some other guys. And even though we had signed it, I decided to do it anyways. And on a side note, I had quite a prolific experience, and that was something that completely changed my life.
That's something we'll get into too. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure, yeah. But in terms of volleyball, I had made a commitment and went against that commitment. And long story short, someone had sent an email to our coach, and on Halloween, actually, of that must have been 2010. Yeah, I was suspended from the team and had to find a new place to play, along with some other players who will remain nameless. And yeah, so then I was kind of looking for another school to go to, and the options then were SC, UCLA, and Hawaii. For some reason, people still wanted me, and I was like, all right, let's get a new opportunity. So I went to Hawaii thinking that I would become this new person, and yeah, it turns out you're always yourself to some degree. And I just thought I could have my cake and eat it too. And the first year at Hawaii was terrible. We had the worst record in school history. And
I didn't realize that.
Everybody, not that this has anything to do with it, but like everyone had like dirty facial hair and long hair, and like we just looked like we were all straight out of the 80s or 70s or whatever. Yeah. So after that first year, I was still kind of into, you know, I was smoking and kind of doing my own thing. And like my way to justify it to myself was, as long as it wasn't affecting volleyball and as long as it wasn't hurting anybody else, and I was making sure my grades were up and everything, like I could, when it was my time to have free time, I would do what I want. And that was kind of my justification to myself. Right. And I did. I always had good grades. Always tried really hard in volleyball and took it really serious and didn't feel that what I was doing was affecting me in a negative way. And so to myself, I was like, oh, then I can do whatever I want. And so that's what I did. And after that first year, I had fought a lot with the head coach, Charlie Wade. We had a lot of differences in ways of thinking. And, you know, I had a hard time letting someone tell me what to do. Yeah. If someone said, okay, I want you to, instead of swing blocking, I want you to just stand there and block, I'd be like, but why? I've always, since I was a kid, was always like, I mean, my parents just came here a week ago and we were talking story. And since I was a kid, I've always been the kid to question things.
Yeah.
You know, we're good at just taking,
which is a great characteristic for somebody.
Sure. Yeah. In retrospect, it's a great, great thing to learn. But what I learned too, is there's also a time and place for that. You know, there's a time to, what I learned exactly with my relationship with Charlie, was, you know, rather than stopping practice immediately to be like, why would I do that? That doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of doing something and realizing that, okay, it's a new way of a new perspective of doing something different and kind of going with it. And if it's a real issue, if I want understanding after the fact, you know, speaking with the coach in the appropriate time, those are things that you learn as you grow.
Yeah.
But yeah, so after that first year of just awfulness, we played so bad. I tore my labrum and I actually played on cortisone basically that whole year. Mm-hmm. And so right when the season was over, I went and got shoulder surgery. And yeah, so coming back from, I mean, I had shoulder surgery in May, and then coming back from that was about probably 6 months. And while that was going on, I was on the team for the following year, even though we had a lot of discrepancies and I wasn't sure if I'd come back. And then eventually that led to an indefinite suspension. And that was kind of them saying like, hey, if you're not going to take this serious, like you need to bail.
Yeah. Right.
And so I was kind of faced with this position of like, well, damn, I can't have my cake and eat it too. You know, like I'm getting good grades. Like, yeah, maybe I can be like a bit too much at times, you know, like always wanting to do my own thing. And you know, the coaches knew I was kind of like known as more of a party kid. Mm-hmm. And it finally hit me after that indefinite suspension in like September of my sophomore year, where I was like, you know what? Like you have a decision to make, you know, cause I can either just kind of quit and try to get into a different career. Like I was like, oh, maybe I'll do music, or maybe I'll do, you know, when you're confronted with the thing you love the most in life is taken away from you, is when you're really confronted with like, all right, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, what else do you love in life? And to make a long story short, what I found that I loved the most was volleyball. I really did. And everything that it had kind of given to me. And I always made jokes about how it kept me off the streets, in quotes. But I really believe that, man. I really believe that like having that healthy vice, or that healthy thing that I love to do, like really did keep me on a good path. And I loved it. And I loved the sport, and I loved everything about it. And yeah, so I made the decision. I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Like I'm gonna put every ounce of my daily energy into like rehabbing. I mean, because at that point I was probably 2 months in. The normal rehab for that kind of torn labrum surgery is like,
yeah, that's not an easy recovery.
No, it's not. Like 8 to 12 months until it feels like kind of normal. And to be honest, it never feels like 100% normal.
Yeah, you're always trying to tighten that suction cup.
Always trying to tighten that suction cup. That's right.
Yep. That's how they explained it to me. I tore my labrum too, and yeah, got a cortisone shot and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, man. They're no fun for sure. No. And I mean, you're out. First of all, I have these terrible scars on my shoulder.
I think they're beautiful. So
thank you. But you're not supposed to go in the sun when you get these kind of scars. But I lived in Hawaii, so that was clearly never going to happen. And now I'll live with
anybody who knows Taylor Averill knows that no sun is no option.
No sun is no option. That's right. Yeah. So anyways, I was kind of faced with that decision in life, and I decided to go for it. And I was lucky enough to get in contact with a guy named Daniel Marchong out of Hawaii. And he's probably the first person who completely changed, my perspective on what I thought was capable, because up to that point, I've always just kind of told, I had these like big birth bearing hips and these chicken legs and these skinny feet. And I was like, you know what, dude, I'm just meant to be an average player, like straight up. And I was not a jumper at all, dude. I mean, even leading into that freshman year, I was just not a kid who jumped very well. Like I just had a strong arm and I was athletic to some degree, but like nothing special. Uh-huh. And after working with him, I mean, he helped me rehab, and I would spend, I'm not kidding, dude, I would spend like 5 to 6 hours doing like rehab training, weightlifting, like everything in cumbersome, like a day. Mm-hmm. In September up until I was eventually let back on the team. And that's when my career completely flipped in, what would that have been, like December, January, I was let back on the team for that season, and then played in the next 2 years, my junior and senior year, I was first team All-American. And that working with Daniel completely changed my life.
Yeah. Sounds like it. Yeah.
And we did a lot of like experimental things too with like, it's called the ARP, which is like this electric magnetic wave kind of like muscle stimulator.
So funny to watch, but it also is really cool to, if you haven't seen it, check it out on Instagram. I can't remember what it's Mar Training, right?
Yeah. Mar Training. That's his Instagram handle.
Yeah.
We work more on like an isometric explosive based theory.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, dude, it worked well for my body. And I think that's like the takeaway from all of that is like to experiment with methods and to realize that it doesn't matter what method it is. It's just to pick it up, to be all about it, and to see how it affects your body, you know, and not to be afraid to like pick something up later and get all about it and like see how it works with your body. And you know, I put in a lot of time and effort to kind of change my life. I mean, I've since just to finish the story there, like since that sophomore year, I got a 4.0 for the rest of my college career. I really dedicated myself to putting in that extra time. I was lucky enough to meet Daniel, who at the time worked at UH. Mm-hmm. So I would wake up, we had weights at 6 a.m. Unfortunately, we had weights at 6 a.m. I would go from there doing the like pretty basic standard university lifting kind of program you do. Uh-huh. And we had a very standard program. I would do that, finish at 7:30, go straight from there to work with Daniel for 2.5 hours. Then after that, we would work with this ARP machine for an extra 30 minutes. And by then it would be like 12 or something. I'd go down, I'd either surf because I was lucky enough to live in Waikiki at the time, come back. And if I didn't have class, I would surf for sure. And then I'd come back and we'd have practice at like 4 or 5. And that was like, I mean, I was so active at my experience in Hawaii, which is just not to fly down the rabbit hole, but such an interesting concept now talking about like what's overtraining and what's not training enough. Mm-hmm. It's just like a conversation that I wish there were more answers to. But you know, for me, I found his program to be incredibly beneficial. And he is, you know, we worked a lot too with like getting in touch with your body. Yeah. So for example, he would have me do exercises like, I would lay down and I would think about like my fist. I closed my eyes. It was like a kind of like a visualization, feeling, meditation kind of mix. Smorgasbord.
Right.
And I would squeeze my fist as hard as I could and then let it go. And I would like feel the blood like in my fingers and my hands and like, and then I'd do it with like, it was like basically for muscle control also.
Yeah.
So like I'd lay it down and I'd try to squeeze just my quad. And instantly when I squeeze my quad, maybe my feet and toes spread out really hard or like my calf is engaged. And I'm like, no, just squeeze the quad. And I'd focus on just squeezing the quad. And what did that feel like? And in doing that at an earlier age in college, I think kind of set me up for realizing how important it is just to be in touch with your body.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something that's really neglected, especially in today's day and age, even though we have the resources to become more in touch with our bodies, little programs like Headspace.
You have more and more every day. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's becoming more trendy, luckily.
Yeah.
The importance of like being in touch with your body. But for myself,
do you see any, to be kind of a devil's advocate again a little bit, do you see any downsides to, because so for instance, I've noticed that throughout my career, if I notice a little ache or pain, that maybe the average person wouldn't notice because I'm so aware of that, of my body. Like, do you, along those lines, do you see any negative impact on your, or in,
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, in that situation, when you're more aware of your body, do you think there's a negative impact for being so aware?
You know, that's a really, really interesting point and interesting question. And to be quite honest with you, I think, yeah, sometimes you could argue that it's better not to know, right?
Yeah.
Like, for sure. But I think, like, it depends what kind of world you want to live in. Like, I want to live in a world of 100% honesty and trust. And the honesty and trust part for myself is like, if I'm feeling pain, like I want to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
If I decide that it's like too painful and I can't do it, well, then that's like my own body mind connection that's deciding that I can't do something.
Right.
But like what I don't, and I know, you know, earlier in my career, it was like taking ibuprofen was like taking candy. You know, and I think you can attest to this a little bit too.
Yes,
but like,
yep.
I would take 4 ibuprofen before every practice, like without thinking about it. Like it was just like, oh, it was like having, you know, out here, like I need a shot of espresso before I go play or something. It's like, you don't even think about it. It's just the normal thing to do.
Yeah.
And when I stopped doing that a couple years ago, I was like, you know what, dude, like if my knees hurt or something, like it's more important that you feel it. And now that I'm thinking about it as I'm talking, I think it's definitely more important to feel it than to not be aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you can do something about it, right? It's like, okay, maybe it hurts and that's your own thing to deal with. How well you can handle pain is different for everyone.
Yeah.
But if I can't feel my knee pain that day, maybe I decide not to rehab or not to do something. And in the long run, it's going to degress my progress.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if I'm becoming less aware, two steps forward,
take six steps back and vice versa for when you're more aware. Yeah,
totally. And I think there's a time and place, like, dude, for me personally, like, yeah, okay, before a match, if I feel like I got some bad aches or whatever, and I don't want to have to think about it, then like, yeah, take some ibuprofen before a match. And I think everything in moderation is kind of the, to sum that up, you know, like, I mean that with literally anything, like everything in moderation. And that goes for like ibuprofen and things, especially in terms of sports, because it's so easy to just be like, well, if I don't have to, you know, the negative health effects of ibuprofen, I know they can't be good. I know there's probably plenty of science out there for people to do their own research. So I don't want to talk on a subject that I really don't know.
Yeah.
But I know that taking something that numbs your pain like that every single day can't be good for you. It just can't be.
Right.
You know, so to kind of answer your question, I feel like feeling is the answer for sure. You know, getting in touch with your body and understanding if something hurts or doesn't hurt or feels better, like you want to know right away. And if you take those kind of numbing drugs like ibuprofen every single day, you'll never really know to the extent of how bad it is until maybe something finally snaps or you go to take a scan or something. And then all of a sudden you don't have enough time to go back and rehab and do these kind of things. Now you're like on a whole different path, you know?
Yeah. So absolutely. So kind of turning the dial 5 degrees, how did nutrition become a part of that whole process for you, that whole journey?
Let's get into the bowl full of soul, dude. I feel that.
Let's fill this bowl.
Well, I mean, I came from like a healthy background to some degree. I would call it like middle-class health.
Yeah. Yeah. Your parents like knew the importance of vegetables, and they, every once in a while you got to eat some fast food. And yeah.
Exactly. Totally. And that, you talk about moderation. I did everything in moderation for sure. There were nights where I'd come home and after practice, I'd get like 50 McNuggets and we'd go to freaking McNuggets.
You know what I'm saying? Right there with you.
Get that sweet and sour sauce.
Oh.
And we'd go to Nugget Town, dude, for sure. But for the most part, like I knew better. And I would say my idea of health in like high school and half of college was way different than it is now. And I think a lot of that came from like my interest and seeing the benefits of not only training really well, but also eating healthy. That combination was like lethal for me, you know, being like, damn, I can feel this good every day if I want, you know, like that's dope. Let's do it, you know? And, you know, it didn't mean that I wasn't going to go out and have a couple beers with some friends or do that kind of thing too. But like, for me, I got to that point where it's like, I'm going to choose feeling good every single day over, you know, feeling good 3 times a week and then maybe really shitty one morning, you know, like having that choice. And then, you know, leading that to now, it's like, I enjoy feeling good. And you never really know how good you feel until you kind of go like, you know, I know there's like the Joe Rogan podcast. I listened to that a bunch and they were talking about how they did like a 30-day sober October, right? And I think everyone should try something similar to that. Like really give up what you know, because people's making it sound like they need all this health advice or whatever. It's like, no, you know,
yeah,
you know that like eating Snickers bars are not good for you. Like it's so simple to some degree.
It's pretty damn primal.
Yeah, for sure. Was it in a wrapper? Like, yeah, it's probably not that good for you.
Yeah.
You know, like how long can it have lasted on the shelf? Like those like really basic stuff that we don't think about maybe so much, or that I would say advertisers do a good job of making you not think about.
Yeah.
And marketers and stuff, but yeah, I really think for me, finding that combination between like training really hard and loving what you're doing there, and like realizing that eating whole healthy foods absolutely changes how you feel. You know, like you talk about like micro gut biome and all that kind of stuff, and like it absolutely, you feel it in your cells. You feel a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like you really do. And I don't mean like I have a salad a couple times a week. It's like, dude, you've lived your whole, a lot of people, and this goes for myself too. I lived, you know, 20 plus, however many years of my life, not eating really healthy, right? And I felt great. There were a lot of days I felt good, but you get kind of moody. Like you have these ebbs and flows of like, some days I feel really good. I don't know why. I just feel good. And some days I feel like shit. And I don't know why. I kind of ate like similar to the other day.
Yeah.
When you start eating like with the rule, and this is kind of what I'm doing now, is just like, if it's a whole food, I'm not going to calorie count. I'm not going to how many grams of this or this or this, because that's not me. But what I do know is if it's a whole food, like you can't go wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, obviously that's a little bit of a rabbit hole. Like, of course you can, timing of the food and what you're eating, it doesn't mean I'm going to eat 50 bananas in one day or something stupid, right? Like having that idea of moderation and mixing up food or whatever is like, I think the biggest thing is if you're eating whole foods, you're on the right path. And when you start eating whole foods consistently, you'll feel that you're on the right path.
Yeah.
And I think people don't give themselves enough time to really adapt to that feeling, right? Like maybe they do like a week, or I'm gonna give up chocolate for a week, or it's gonna make a huge difference. And like, well, that's a great step to take, you know, like don't be afraid to like slowly work that into something that's more reasonable to live.
Yeah.
You know, I am fortunate enough to have the personality of like, I kind of like going 100 or nothing.
Yeah.
I get really inspired. So if I'm like, all right, we're doing ketogenic diet, it's like, we're not kind of doing it. It's like, we're doing it.
All in.
You know, we're 100% doing ketogenic diet, and that's all that exists. And this is, you know, my own kind of person that I'm still feeling and figuring out, right? That like, all right, I can, and sometimes I need to take a breath here and there and just be like, okay, like I thought ketogenic thing was the best diet in the world, you know, but maybe it's not the most suitable for my lifestyle,
yeah,
for my sport or whatever. And you kind of morph. And what brings me back is like, okay, as long as I'm eating whole foods, I know I'm doing good things for my body. I'm not expecting perfection. I don't write my diets down. I don't do anything like that I probably should or could. Like I try to make it so it's
It's hard to keep up with those and to keep.
It's really hard, man. I mean,
think about it that much.
For sure. And, you know, perfect example is last year in Padua when we played together, we had a teammate named Stephen Marr who plays for Canada. Yeah, I love the guy. I just saw him a couple weeks ago, man. I really love the guy. But,
yeah,
you know, he would kind of, he bought a little scale and he would do it for a little bit. And like anything, you know, the first couple of days, the week is great. But then it's like, it's not suitable, man. No one wants to put that much time and effort into like the most basic human need, which is like food and water and stuff, right? You know, like you don't want to have to use that much mental energy writing up a plan and coming up. If you need to, for whoever you are listening, like, then you should. You know, if you feel like you need to, definitely try it. Write it all out. Get a scale. Like, do the whole nine. Like, why not?
Yeah.
But I know for myself, like, I try to make it as, like, chill as possible. You know, so I'm not, like, specifically right now, I'm not on a specific diet of any sorts. I'm more just like, okay, what do I have? I know that fasting, I know this idea from the ketogenic diet that I got. Like, what were my results? Like, when I did ketogenic diet really strict, I was at for sure the lowest body fat I've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Mentally, I don't think I've ever thought clearer, but physically I fatigued in the weight room faster than when I wasn't. And, right. And for that, it was kind of, you know, in listening to my body, I said, okay, wow, like what's the positive and negative here? Like I love having mental clarity for sure. I mean, I think you could almost argue it's more important. Like I'd almost take some fatigue for the mental clarity I was getting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So now I'm on my new search of like, all right, well, what's the perfect balance for me? Maybe it's like occasionally if I get a day off or something, fasting. Mm-hmm. Or because there's so many benefits to fasting, you know, like maybe it's, you know, mixing it up. Maybe I do like a ketogenic day. I don't know. I still don't know. There's so much research pointing in every different direction and you don't know who to believe. And like, but what I do know is if I'm eating whole healthy foods, like I'm doing something good for my body. And I think that's like a really good place to start. Like how many ingredients does this food have? One. Okay. Like it's not going to kill me. You know, it's going to probably benefit me positively in some way.
So that was part one. Definitely stay tuned for part two. We will get into a whole lot more good stuff and get into kind of his maturation process through college and his ability to follow what he loves, the sport he loves, volleyball, which has brought him to some incredible places and, in my opinion, to an insanely cool state of mind and being where he is at this point in time. So that episode is coming next week. Awesome. All right. That's it. That's all, folks. See you next week. Remember to subscribe and share and review and rate my podcast, this show. To do that, you can go search it on the bottom of your phone or on the iTunes app on your computer, wherever you're listening to it, and search the name of this podcast. Go to the title page, and it'll all be there. The purple buttons, the subscribe button, and all that good stuff is down below. Anyways, yeah, that's it. Thank you so much for doing that. It means a ton to me, and it helps out a ton too. So, All right, that's it. Once again, see you next week. James signing out.